This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Seeberg, sitting in his Bavarian style lederhosen at home. Good morning, Robert.
Why are you sitting in lederhose?
There is a celebration today of the very famous 1516 Bavarian purity law. By which you're only allowed to brew beer of a certain kind with very specific ingredients. Okay. Do you recall?
Yes, I remember. Yesterday was the German Day of Beer.
It is actually the official day, yeah, yesterday. And for those Munich people listening, by the time you hear this, this day that we are, Robert and I, recording is gone by then. If not, you could come into Munich town to the so-called Bierbrunnen, where there's free beer today. And I will be singing there with our choir. That's the reason.
Okay. But before you start to sing, let's start with our podcast and with our news part. This episode, the main topic is large language model, PLCs, and robots. That's more in the main part. Let's start in our news part.
Number one, DeepMind and the Brain team from Google Research, they will be joining forces as a single unit focused, called then Google DeepMind, and it's going to be run by Demis Hassabis, the guy that initiated and has run DeepMind, but until then, a couple of days ago, as I believe it was a daughter company of Alphabet, actually, right?
We will have a guy from DeepMind, I think, in summer in our podcast.
Oh, very good.
They will talk about robots and AI.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it. Yeah. It's just a week ago that I shared an in-depth interview with Demis. I've said it many, many times. He's my number one, two, next to Andrew, next to Sepp. Yeah, there's, you know, like five persons. Sorry to say that they are guys. I'm sure that very soon there's going to be a woman, at least one woman, to join that crew. So I'm going to share the comments by Michael Welch, who was on our show before. A couple of sentences. He says, Google obviously pushed the red alert button all the way through the table, is how he puts it, with the world laughing at Bart compared to ChatGPT, and Google falling far behind in AI. DeepMind, which he says is one of the most respected labs ever, I would strongly agree, is being unceremoniously merged into operations to get back in the game. I'm going to leave out the next two sentences. That's the view of Michael. Let's see. At least, of course, we wished him all the best. I would at least agree. I'll show you how you see it, that a lot of the language models based technology, you know, specifically the attention is all you need transformers, you know, the big follow-up of recurrent networks of LSTM, they were developed at Google Brain, right?
Absolutely. I want to add something because you mentioned transformers.
Right.
Because I visit Sepp Hochreiser last week in Linz. And we had a little chat, sure, about large language models. And then
ChatGPT,
we had a chat about ChatGPT and large language models. And then he mentioned something, and this is very interesting because he said, we have an LSTM based large language model that seems to be better than ChatGPT and GPT-4. Wow. And we have to stall the research because of missing funding. And this is a big problem because he has no data and he needs a lot of capabilities to do this testing. And he's very upset with this situation.
I can imagine. We will talk about this more often. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about it now. There was also, was it a piece? I'm not sure who was writing it. It was about researchers in general at universities. Were they referring to European universities, whatever, or more in general, many researchers in the artificial intelligence space who, just because of lack of funding, see all these great things happening. And we're in the very middle of it all the time, speaking about it, OpenAI, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to continue. And then they say, well, what are we going to do? You know, this was our job. I'm whatever. I'm a researcher. I'm a professor. I'm a researcher. It doesn't matter. That's the job I'm being paid for. But if I don't get funding, what am I going to do, right?
Okay, let's go ahead.
No, well, I wasn't ready with this one. So, no, great put. And we shall. I'm always going to suggest, if that is as it is, and a very interesting piece of information you're sharing with us there, it's almost like a must read, all of us, as far as we can. Attention is all you need. 5 years old, it changed the world, I do believe. And it was the follow-up of recurrent neural networks of LSTM. Yep. And if now Zap, the inventor of LSTM, is going to say, well, maybe that's going to change again, it's almost like it's a must read for all of you, all dear listeners, for you as well, Robert, for me again, you know, until the point where, you know, all the mathematics start. And then, but at least I believe we do need to really understand what it's all about. Number two, I was going to say, for the moment, yes, I would agree that OpenAI Microsoft is clearly in the lead. I think we're going to see a lot of new large language model product categories, maybe one or maybe many different new product categories, right? Infrastructure, applications, industries. And we, that is you and I, Robert, we're going to help you, listener, to guide through this new world. And of course, specifically around industrial AI, large language model solutions.
Yeah, but when I talk to Sepp, I also ask him, are we now focusing too much on large language models? Are we talking too much about them? And he said, yes, maybe. There are a lot of more use cases you won't solve with large language model in the industrial sector, for example. And he said, yeah, but this generative AI, we will see a lot more in simulation topics. There will be more topics on generative AI and simulation, but there are a lot of different other use cases in the industrial sector, which cannot be solved with large language model.
Sure. Yeah. And that is good to hear. And of course, there is still a group of people who strongly disagree that we should continue at all. Yep. They want us to stop. I mean, if I say they, we, I mean, I'm not going to choose, you know, left or right. It's I don't think that that's our job. We just give you the information. I mean, I think we can if we want to give our opinion. But those people, and there may be, you know, amongst you listeners as well. And that is as it is. And we're going to see the world, you know, change over the next weeks, months. And at the same time, sure, we're going to look at whatever comes up new as well, be it, you know, LSTM-based ChatGPT kind of style solution, or, of course, other solutions. We are industrial AI, and that's where we will be reporting about.
And it's so funny because I've never seen Sepp so enthusiastic and so happy and so full of power since the last 3 or 4 years. He's absolutely back on track, I would say. And he's working on it the whole day, from morning to the evening at night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he promised that when he has something, he will share it with us in our podcast.
Perfect. I was going to ask, did he share some mathematics with you?
Yes,
or
yes,
or
maybe,
but I, at a high
I,
level?
I drank my espresso and said, yes, 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 Sepp, yes, 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 Sepp.
Good.
Okay.
I've got a second one, if I may. It's in relation, actually, not to mathematics, but to programming. You know, last time I talked about the job killer generative. Today, almost like continuing, it's a quote from Tyler Gibbs. He's a student at the University of Central Oklahoma. I'm not sure that you're listening, Tyler. If so, thank you again. It was more like a very, I don't know what it was, but I saw it. He wrote down, the hottest new programming language is English.
Yes.
And when I saw that, I saw my mind started kind of doing all kind of weird things. So basically, I'm not going to share all of what I wrote down there, but basically, I believe that telling a machine what to do has been, I believe, a privilege. And I've always been the guy to say, you know, people who can study, many of our listeners, and we do, you know, in the summer always are 3-4 episodes on what students can learn at universities, have always been, always are under this great privilege. Now, a privilege for persons to be able to study computer science, right? For the last 50 years, it's been like that. In the beginning, there was this assembler, you know, programming, really programming chips, you know. Then came COBOL for administrative, as I did, BASIC, Fortran, Pascal, C, C++, Sharp, Java, and of course, there's Python as well. And now there is
English
or, you know, or German or French or whatever language you're going to speak, right? So what does that mean, you know? Now any person with access to a computer, let's put it that, can tell a machine what to do by writing it down or speaking to it. So not going through, you know, open if this and no, just telling it. So what implications is that going to have to all those persons that have been, let's say, excluded from telling a machine what to do so far? That's amazing, right?
Absolutely.
And on the other hand, of course, what implications to a global IT industry built around the core programming capability?
Yeah.
You know, how many programmers do we have around the world? Yeah. What is your guess?
It's funny because you mentioned this also at our discussion at the Hannover Messe Trade Fair show, and the audience, where everybody was smiling when you said that, and I thought the smiling is a little bit, oh, this crazy old man there, what is he telling? Really? But I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. But there's something more, because we talked about with Siemens about this ChatGPT, and in the main part you will hear more about this prompt, and then there's an injection prompt. They have an injection prompt and they add something to the prompt, the automation knowledge. So I think English is it's possible, but you as an IT company or as an automation company or whatever, if you want to solve a specific use case, you need to have this automation knowledge or this IT knowledge. I think that's the new way to inject this prompt with this knowledge behind, huh?
That's my feeling, my understanding as well, you know, from the point that OpenAI was announcing this, what are they, Linkins, or how do they call them? I forgot how they call them.
Okay.
Sure. Any of you listeners, companies, I'm sure what is going to happen is that, you know, all of us are going to be using this vast, huge, and maybe they're going to be smaller, bigger, it doesn't matter. Maybe they're going to be transformer-based, LSTM-based, it doesn't matter. But we have seen what is possible with still, you know, the problems on the side that we have. And I'm sure that all of us are then going to connect up our core crown jewel knowledge that we have. And it's going to, of course, stay crown jewels inside of your company. And that way, you're going to have the domain expert, the person who is in charge of, let's say, making this robot here in front of me do certain things. And I have not been doing that, but I'm sure there is a team of people around that robot and they program the robot. And that becomes more easier, you know, for the last 10 years already. And now the person who says, no, I want the robot to first go to the left and right and pick this thing and do it. And the person is going to be saying that because the background engineering, whatever kind of knowledge that we have in our own company, you in your own company, listener, you know, that's going to be connected to it. And I'm sure, I'm not saying it's happening today or tomorrow, but yes, I'm saying it is happening tomorrow. And if tomorrow is a year or two or five, but we have to prepare, we have to use it. It's an amazing opportunity that we have, I believe.
Absolutely. But do you remember what Bo Scharinger from Siemens told us? Right. They are focusing on event large models. You know that? Do you remember that?
No,
he was, not focused on large language models. He was focused on large event models around the whole factory, around next to the machine. I think this is very interesting.
But that's another use case. I gave as just one example use case robot, and Bar says, you know, use case events.
Yep.
Is that what you?
Yeah,
sure. But all the things happening around industrial production and all the things that we talk about all the time, I am convinced it is with the language of English or French or German, you're just going to program. You're going to tell what to do. We've been saying that all the time on the top level. If you are the domain expert, you're telling, I want this to happen. I want input, this to happen, output, all at the top level. And then the IT team, let's say, that's how it's probably called. And it's maybe not even anymore called that, I don't know. And that's going to be a lot more integrated. I'm convinced it's going to be like that.
You want to add something in the news part?
No, that was it from my side.
And I have one quote at the end. I don't know if I translate it right, but Hans Beckhoff, he said in a press conference, they also showed some stuff like ChatGPT and PLC stuff. Understanding ChatGPT as a thought amplifier. You know what I mean? A thought amplifier to increase thinking. Yeah.
Sure.
And that's what it is. I think it's a tool. It's a tool for the people who are programming the PLC. Yep.
Sure, but I think that's how we've always been looking at
yeah.
it. We're just moving. We're moving, you know, closer towards, I don't know where to. You know, certain people believe we already have. AGI, I saw a former, you know, colleague, acquaintance of me mm-hmm. saying we're already there without saying, you know, I was listening again to a couple of interviews. We're moving further, closer. We're moving, and I believe that nobody is really disagreeing that every now and then we see certain intelligence without knowing, and we're going to continue to have that problem, what the definition of that is. But I've always said, like, if as soon as there's a, what is that? Oh, what is that? Oh, was that a machine doing that? Was it a piece of software doing that? How can it do that? This piece of, and it's always, of course, difference if there's consumers, you know, consumer people coming to the trades fair, or if there's business people, or if it's you or I or Zep or other specialists who have come to realize, yeah, sure, that we can do that these days. That's normal. The people who haven't seen it. And since in the last couple of weeks, it's suddenly our private people, you know, our parents, our children, our friends around us, they start talking to us, right? They say, Peter, you know, you've been doing this AI for 5 years, right? And now they hear it in television and everywhere. And they are then, oh, wow, oh, they see what is happening, right? So
yeah, it's interesting because when I talk to these two colleagues from HPE, we also talk at the end about shifting borders or boundaries and new definitions of AI. Is it now general AI or, you know, there's a discussion in the community about how we call it now and which stage we are now and which level we are playing. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's probably going to continue. Yeah, it doesn't really matter that we're ever going to reach singularity or not, as it was called, and it was 2045 and whatever. It doesn't really matter. You know, we've just seen a huge move of which certain people are really afraid even, and, you know, probably the most important thing is, and I did see this interview from, is it Greg Brockman, co-founder of OpenAI on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, it's half an hour, a TED interview he's doing. It's very good. I must say that in the end, having done a 2.5 hours, Sam Altman and a half an hour, Greg, the two guys who did it, you know, they appear such sincere and open and towards making sure that we as a global community make this right. And of course, in the end, you can always say, oh, yeah, you want to make business. They don't give that feeling at all. So at least I have a good feeling that it's in the hands of two people running, you know, a huge community, a company and community, and now together with Microsoft, then there comes, of course, the business in. But a feeling I have is at least it's in good hands, a lot better than as if it would have been in the hands of certain other people whose name I do not mention.
Thank you, Peter. It was a pleasure. And now we are switching in the main part. There we have two different use cases. One use case is Microsoft Siemens TIA portal and prompt injection topic, and the other is HPE together with Aleph Alpha with this big German large language model. And there's a focus on robotics and how to use a large language model for robotics.
Good. Robert, have a good day. Talk to you soon.
Welcome to the main part, and I first speak with Iveta Lohovska, Principal Data Scientist, and Andy Longworth, Data Platform Lead at HPE. So enjoy listening.
Iveta, what do you present at the Hofer Nofer Messe Trade Fair Show concerning generative AI and robotics in special.
Mm-hmm. We have a fine-tuned model coming from Aleph Alpha. The model is called Luminous, and we have fine-tuned it and trained it for the manufacturing-specific use case, where we are navigating the knowledge base of the robot with multi-modular, multilingual capabilities, so it supports video, images, text, and several languages. In this case, we show German and English, and we provide factful, nice, summarized information based on the prompts request of the user.
Can you describe the process, what the user has to do?
So in interacting with the demo, you need to either take an image or make a prompt in the form of voice to text, or just write a text on it. And you can request and ask the model anything. So how many arms does the robot has, or what's the color of the robot, or what is the security certification? How can I repair the robot? And the generative AI model based on Aleph Alpha's technology is providing you a summary or an answer or knowledge information of how you can execute on your request, basically.
You mentioned Aleph Alpha. That's a large language model made from in Germany, made in Europe. Why you choose them?
For several reasons. So first, the Luminous model coming from Aleph Alpha is positioned as a European sovereignty. It ranks number one and number two in fairness, trustworthiness, explainability, and bias-free based on the Stanford evaluation reports. Also, it's the right model when it comes to enterprise industrial use cases, because it's not a conversational, in a way, chatbot. It's a knowledge worker. So you can train it on a specific data set within a specific context, and you can optimize around correctness and factfulness instead of just getting any kind of answer. And for us and for our enterprise customers, I think that's a one of the most important things. So basically running generative AI at the edge at enterprise scale.
That's interesting. You mentioned the data set. How big is this data set for this use case?
The bigger, the better. In our, yes, because it's generative AI. But in our case, we are training it on the whole documentation base of the Yumi robot. So we can deal with 2,000 to 4,000 pages of manufacturing documentation.
So this is a knowledge management service you provide to factories. What is the next step? Do you think about programming a robot with a large language model?
Yeah, that's definitely possible, and we can take it to the next level. So we can start recording events. So basically you can go push the robot, you can block the robot, it creates an event and summary that something happened to the process or to the robot. Well, the model itself, the AI model, can now go and read those log files. So basically gets into the firmware of the robot and start being more prescriptive and more exact of what exactly is happening in real time, and start interacting with the robot configuration as a next step.
You mentioned it goes into the firmware. That's very interesting, because the robots companies don't want to open this firmware or the PLC code or whatever. Andy, that's your part from the architecture. Can you describe the architecture, large language model, PLC, robot, what you did?
So what we've got here is the large language model running at the edge. We're not integrated with the PLC in the demo that we have, but what we can do is use the APIs that Yumi provides us to then, as Yvette says, take the prompt, take the command of what to do, and take the output of the model and integrate that with the APIs from the PLC to then start controlling the model. So being able to tell the robot, move the left arm to position one, move the right arm to position two, and start to have manual control over what you're doing with the robot. And that will give you more flexibility, for example, in learning or prototyping, rather than the final assembly, for example, where you have a very fixed routine.
There's a robot from ABB, so it's very interesting for ABB maybe. It's good for the large language model, but what's your business case?
Yeah, so the business case is really using Aleph Alpha as a partner, so training the model using the Aleph Alpha service online. Then as a system integrator, we're pulling in the whole integration of the pipeline. So how do I take that data set, so the documentation from ABB, curate that data in a way that I can put it into Aleph Alpha's model to train the knowledge base, and then get the model out of that. And then we need to deploy that model somewhere. So you could call that from an internet service if you wish, but if you've got a disconnected factory, that's not going to be the most practical way to do it. So for us, what we want to do is get that edge hardware out there onto the factory floor and be able to run the model there at the factory floor. But that requires integration. So we need a way to go from the source data, training the model, pushing the model out to the edge, and managing it through its life cycle, being able to get that feedback and improve what you're doing with the model and have the feedback loop for your next training round and essentially evolve and improve over time with that. That's how we make the money, the system integration. That's our model.
And the MLOps business, all right, the pipeline model.
Yeah, exactly. Building those bespoke pipelines, because what one customer wants to do based on their factories, where they are, how they have them connected or integrated, is going to be very different from the next customer. So we look to have standardized tools to help with the pipelines and MLOps pipelines, but the implementation of the pipeline is going to be very specific to a particular customer and how they operate.
When we talk with companies in the industrial sector, data security is a very important topic for them. And now you train this big large language model. Is it important where the data goes to?
I think yes. And that's one of the biggest use cases for enterprise customers, is how their data is treated and also how you're using this data to train generic models or any kind of models. And this is our also sweet spot, to basically try to execute this at the edge. So not just the training, the inference, and this shouldn't leave their factory or their plant or their specific data center. This is either a manufacturing plant if they have it locally or if this is the device. So the use cases, especially in generative AI now, are trying to move closer and closer to the actual devices, production lines and sensors. And that's one of the important components when it comes to data security and data transfer. Also because it's very expensive to transfer all of this, especially in the context of generative AI, when we know how big the data sets are.
I would add on to that. It's like any security measure, isn't it? It's like insurance. The customer's got to decide how important this is to them and then say, okay, can I release my data outside of my factory walls or outside of my organization? Or do I want to keep everything here within the factory? And they have associated costs. You may be able to do something cheaper in the cloud, but you expose yourself to more risk. So as an organization, you then need to say, okay, where does my risk reward level sit and where am I comfortable?
And I could just add that exactly following that argument, before the trade-off could be to reduce performance for the sake of being able to deploy this at the edge, especially now with generative AI. But it's more and more the case that we're able to shrink the size of the models. And even if we make them with less features and less parameters, they perform equally well also at industrial use cases. So I see that the compromises either from the performance level for the sake of security or a budget will be less and less necessary in an enterprise context.
This shrinking, is it a testing how this model then performs?
I think, yeah, it's a bit of an iterative game where you have to find the right balance or the right setup, but it's becoming more and more handleable with more powerful edge computing and better architecture. So that's why Andy's team and the job they do around data-centric architecture is extremely cool, because if you want to be able to run those kind of models efficiently and also solve a problem that's also solvable from business perspective, those kinds of solutions are key. It's not just the AI machine learning work on top of that.
It's interesting because you speak about generative AI and not about large language models. When you look into the future, we talk about generative AI, maybe about DALL-E for engineers and product development with generative AI. What is in your horizon?
So just the fact that if you hear the conversation between the top 5 or 10 generative AI providers, and there is no clear agreement if this is artificial general intelligence or artificial narrow intelligence, is already a bit scary, because we as a society also don't have a clear definition, and we keep changing the formulation of when it overcomes human intelligence. So I think we are very, very close to generative intelligence. Models like ChatGPT and Palm and Llama and all of those are still considered narrow intelligence, but I think the future will be that it becomes reality to be in the generative, so basically artificial general intelligence. And then the next step is moving to artificial superintelligence, which are terms that are coming more and more often in the conversation, you know, in the podcast, people start mentioning it more. And before it was circling around narrow and general, and now it's around general and super, which is shift in a further in the direction.
I would add to that, that as you were saying, it's about the business model as well. So bigger isn't always better. So you've got to balance that. What am I going to get? You know, there's the development of the large language models and how can they improve? But from the business point of view, from a manufacturing point of view, how does it help me improve my business? And so we've got to balance against that and say, okay, you know, here is good enough for your manufacturing scenario. Here's good enough in your factory. Yes, the research might be able to do much, much more, but there are limits of what you're going to get on from your return on investment within the factory or within your industry use case.
Do you also talk to the robots company for ABB for a special, because you use this API? It's interesting for ABB too to provide this.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting from there. It's a value add that they can add around their robot. So you could conceivably sell this as a service on top of what, you know, your maintenance of the robots along with that. So there's a win-win there for ABB and for us at HPE as well, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. So next to me is standing Eric Szczepanski. Hello, Eric. Welcome.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
We are talking about the hot stuff at the Hannover Messe Trade Fair Show, the ChatGPT interaction with a PLC with a controller made by Siemens. Can you describe us the approach you show here?
So basically what we're doing is we're using Azure OpenAI services to generate code, PLC code for our engineering environments. We are optimizing it, we are finding problems, and the last part is the documentation of existing code.
Well, what can you do with this ChatGPT connection to a PLC, to a TIA portal?
So what we're doing is we're just using natural language, putting it into the Azure OpenAI service, and then it generates code out of it, which is quite good for the PLC.
How good is this code at the end?
It's not perfect, so there are some issues. We see that the model is not capable of creating PLC code on its own, so we need to inject some automation knowledge, so some Siemens knowledge as well. So the basic, it knows the basics because it knows how to program Python and C, and it's able to transfer from one language to another when you give it some more information about the automation context. Yeah.
So you have this prompt from the engineer or from the programmer, and he writes this prompt. And what happens then?
So in the background, there is some additional information. This is the automation context we give the model, so we know how automation code is developed and what are the rules behind it, and we give some more information around it, and then the model is capable of generating PLC code. Not perfect, as I said, but it's already quite good, and it's a first starting point for further development. So we try to really enhance the way we do in automation engineering to get faster and maybe in the future to also achieve a higher quality.
And you mentioned this topic, documentation. What is the use case behind this?
So we talked to a lot of customers the past months, and they said a lot of people are retiring. We have a lot of brownfield installations, and they don't know what is behind the code, what is the code doing. And so we are helping the customers. They take the existing code, and then they get a description what the code is doing and how it works, as well as for the customers of our customers. So you always need to describe what your code is doing, and this is the programmers do not like to do the documentation. It takes a lot of time, but it needs to be done, and we are supporting our customers in this place. Yeah.
Is this ChatGPT, OpenAI, Azure, as you mentioned, is it a showcase or will be there a real product out of it?
So in the current phase, it's just a showcase. We're investigating this technology area. We've seen some good results, some not so good results.
What is not good?
So sometimes the model is hallucinating. It's just creating strange stuff and we're not able to replicate it. So sometimes it generates other code than a few hours before.
As you mentioned, you add something to the prompt. Is it a more translation because IEC is not a language that this model can speak or understand?
So the model always tries to go back to a language it knows and add some functions or some stuff which is not allowed to use in PLC programs. And then we say, okay, this is not allowed, stick to these rules. And yeah, this is like the basis of our prompt.
What about new languages for PLC? We talk about IEC, but there will be new languages. You can program PLC with different languages. Does it become easier then?
It might become easier, yeah. It might become easier when you're able to program your PLC with another language like Python. It might be easier, but yeah, in the current status, we just focusing on IEC. The model is not capable of the normal model, the ChatGPT, normal ChatGPT model is not able of doing it.
You mentioned now the ChatGPT. Do you use this database from your own or do you use the ChatGPT database? Is it possible that you train your own data? Where's the connection?
So in the current phase, we're not able to fine-tune the model because there are some legal issues, some data privacy concerns. But later this year, we will be able, and we are investigating how to fine-tune such a model. This is under investigation. As I said, this is not a product yet, but we are trying to investigate the whole area and try to understand which way would be the best for us to move forward.
And the idea is to reduce engineering time, right?
Yeah, to reduce engineering time is our biggest goal in this direction, as well as education. As I said, there so many people are retiring. Many universities do not teach how to program a PLC, but they teach how to program Python. The people are able to generate code, but they're not able to generate PLC code. Maybe there's a way to help them to go from Python to a PLC code language.
How long have you been working on this showcase use case?
So we started investigating this whole area in September last year, talked to a lot of customers, like the former versions, GPT-3 and others. For preparing the showcase, we started in January.
So you already thought about GPT before it was a hype?
Yeah, we did that and then they released ChatGPT and everyone was freaking out. And then we said, okay, we need to further go in this direction. This was already really interesting before ChatGPT for us, but now we're sure that it will, or might transform our industry.
You mentioned it might transform the whole industry. But we have a lot of use cases where we do not need or we use different technologies. And I think it's a focus now on large language models, but there are a lot of more AI ideas to use. Is it a little bit a problem that you're now focusing so much on large language models?
So this is not the only focus of Siemens. There are a lot of other projects around it. So Boris, for example, has a lot of projects in different areas, quality inspection, for example, but it's not the focus, it's one of our focuses. So we have the engineering, we have the operation, and
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks.